Hey, folks, as we approach another critical election, a wave of concern washes over America. Recent studies reveal that an astonishing 56% of our fellow citizens report feelings of anxiety or dread about the upcoming presidential election. That's why I stand with AMAC. AMAC is more than a senior discount organization. During these challenging times, they fight for common sense and hope that our nation returns to traditional American values. Visit amac.us/justnews today to seize an exclusive election year special, a four-year AMAC membership for just $30. That's right, you heard me right, 4 years for 30 bucks. As an AMAC member, you're not only enjoying money-saving benefits, but also the AMAC magazine, free Social Security and Medicare advice, a trusted voice in Washington, and a community of like-minded patriots who love this great nation. Take advantage of this election year special, 4 years for $30, and be part of the solution over the next 4 years. By becoming an AMAC member, you're strengthening a movement dedicated to preserving the principles we hold dear in this great country. Join now at amac.us/justnews. That's amac.us/justnews. Hello, America, and happy Wednesday, or we might say the second day of the election for a House Speaker. We haven't said that many times in history. We have to go back a century from the last time that we've had a contested two-day or more multiple vote contest for a Speaker. But Kevin McCarthy on this day has lost two more elections, bringing the total to five, and a sixth one is about to begin as we start this podcast. It's an extraordinary moment, but what's really going on here is a battle for the heart and soul of the Republican Party, a fight over whether Republicans, who have portrayed themselves since the Barry Goldwater era as the fiscal conservatives, are actually going to match the promise with their actions. That's what these 20 holdout Republicans, now 21, because Virginia Sparks has voted present today, that's what they're fighting for. It's not about the rolls. It's not about all the arcane things that the news media would have you focus on. It's on whether the entire Republican caucus will trust that Kevin McCarthy's leadership will lead them to smaller government, smaller spending, and the end of these extraordinary deficits, which, by the way, have grown in just 20 years from $6.7 trillion in national debt to $32 trillion at the end of this fiscal year. That is what's at stake here. That's what you're really watching. And today, we've seen Kevin McCarthy face the same defeat he faced three times yesterday, two more times today. Sounds like it'll be a third time before it's all done. We're going to bring in Nick Ballesy in the middle of the show to give us an update right from the floor of the House where the vote is taking place. But first, we're going to have a very special opportunity today. I'm really excited about our lineup. Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, newly elected. He was sworn in because the Senate is actually in business now, yesterday to his third term. He has been a champion of truth. There were three major things that I've been able to cover Senator Johnson on in the last few years. The first was unraveling the Russia collusion scandal. The second was unraveling the Hunter Biden scandal. Even when we were told it was Russian disinformation, Senator Johnson fought the FBI, fought the Democrats, fought the mainstream media, fought social media, and got the facts out to the American people alongside of people like Senator Chuck Grassley. And then more recently, he has challenged the concerns or the public health community's refusal to look at the concerns about adverse reactions from the COVID-19 vaccine. And on all three of those fronts, Ron Johnson began with a maelstrom of antagonism, a maelstrom of efforts to silence him. On all three, he has prevailed. We now know the truth about Russia collusion. It was an FBI investigation without a predicate. It did not find collusion because it didn't happen. We now know that Hunter Biden's laptop was real and that the foreign business deals that I began writing about in 2019, that Peter Schweitzer began writing about in 2018, that Miranda Devine wrote about starting in late 2020, that they were true, that these were real issues, that these business deals occurred, that Hunter Biden was trading on his father's name in foreign countries and landing a lot of money, and in some cases, arranging meetings with his father or meetings in his father's orbit. Now, Senator Ron Johnson has now been able to get the CDC, to get the medical health community, to get some social media companies to acknowledge that there are significant signals, that's what the medical community calls them, significant signals of adverse reactions to the COVID-19 vaccine. Doesn't mean that the whole COVID vaccine is a failure. Doesn't mean that it doesn't help many people. But it does mean that there is injury potential there, that there are unresolved or unexplained consequences for some people who take the vaccine or the booster after that. And he was silenced for a long time. But in the recent days, including in the last 24 hours with the CDC, we're now beginning to see more and more and more people discuss the reality of that. And today, Senator Ron Johnson is going to address all of those things and what the delay in American people getting the truth about the FBI, about Hunter Biden, about the vaccine, about mitigation strategies for COVID, what consequence it has had on the everyday Americans like myself and you who live in this country and rely on the decisions of our government to be honest, to give us the information that we can make informed decisions, whether it's whether to elect Joe Biden or Donald Trump in the 2020 election, where we were kept from the knowledge of Hunter Biden's laptop, or whether to understand that the FBI engaged in misconduct to try to frame a president with a Russia collusion narrative that wasn't true, or to make an informed decision, to give informed consent about whether I should take a vaccine or not, put that into my body because it will help me or not help me, or has the potential to hurt me, doesn't have the potential to hurt me. That's what Senator Johnson's going to be here to talk about. Then we'll get that update from Nick Ballasy. That's going to be pretty exciting. And then we'll wrap up with a new guest, someone first time on the show. He is the chairman of the committee to defeat the president. Used to be a super PAC that was supporting Donald Trump. Before that, he ran a super PAC stopping Hillary Clinton. So he was a chairman of the Stop Hillary PAC in 2016. He was chairman of the committee to defend the president, a super PAC for President Trump. And now he's the chairman of the committee to defeat the president, a la Joe Biden. Ted Harvey joins us, former Colorado state senator. He has a lot of interesting insights about what's going on in the world. And he has a bold prediction who might be a leading contender for the Democratic nomination for president that you're not thinking about. No, not Gavin Newsom. No, not Kamala Harris. No, not Joe Biden. He's got another name. If you tune in, you're going to get it. And he'll explain why this particular Democrat could emerge as an unexpected contender in the 2024 race. I'm sure he'll weigh in on President Trump's prospects for re-election in 2024 and those of Governor DeSantis. Lots of exciting discussion ahead with Ted Harvey and, of course, starting with Senator Ron Johnson right after these commercial messages. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. Hey folks, if you're a homeowner and you're like me, you want to protect your home, right? But when's the last time you checked on the title to your home? If you never have, listen to this. A new report on homeowners shows we all now have $16 trillion in equity. That's an all-time high in America. That's why you need protection from a scam the FBI calls house stealing. That's when the equity in all of our homes is the target, sadly, of scammers. If nobody's watching the title to your home, these scammers can transfer your title to their name, take out loans, and your equity could be gone. Poof, gone. You have to protect your equity from this despicable crime right now with triple lock protection from my good friends at HomeTitleLock.com. The first step is to check on your home's title to see if it's still in your name. Sign up with your address at HomeTitleLock.com and be sure to use the promo code JUSTNEWS. They're going to send you a complete title scan of your home's title and your first 30 days of triple lock home title protection. That's legendary protection, by the way. It's free. HomeTitleLock.com. Use the promo code JUSTNEWS. One more time, go to HomeTitleLock.com today and protect your most important asset, the equity in your home. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. So excited to have this next guest on. Yesterday, he raised his hand and was sworn in for his third term as a United States Senator from the great state of Wisconsin, where I spent 8 years of my life. Joining us right now, Senator Ron Johnson. Senator, congratulations on a third term and welcome to the show.
Well, Happy New Year, John. Look forward to talking to you here.
Absolutely. Well, listen, over the holidays, I thought of you several times because there were study after study, announcement after announcement, usually in foreign countries, but some in America too, where there's an acknowledgement that there is the phenomenon of vaccine injury, that the COVID-19 vaccines do have some problems. A year and a half ago, when you started just to ask the right questions about this, you were ridiculed, you censored. Now we're beginning to see the truth come out. One, I'm sure it's satisfying, too, but also frustrating that it took so long, right?
Well, it's enormously frustrating because I think we could have prevented so much harm if our federal health agencies would have been honest and transparent, if they would have actually used the safety surveillance systems that they were touting in October before they got the emergency use authorization on this. That then they basically denigrated once those safety surveillance systems were screaming at them that there were real serious safety signals. For example, Bayer's. I remember, I think it was about the April timeframe. And by the way, I was always watching Bayer's because I've been talking to these eminently qualified doctors and medical researchers that had reservations about this mRNA technology. So I was talking to people before the emergency use authorization was granted. And so I thought we ought to exercise some caution on here. Now, I was a big supporter of Operation Warp Speed. I'm definitely not anti-vax, but I realized this was something different. I mean, this literally is gene therapy. They had to change the definition of vaccine to, you know, get this into that category. But when I saw, back then is, I think, over 3,000 deaths reported on Bayer's by and I hate to, say the exact time frame, but these were worldwide deaths. At that time, more than 40% were occurring on day 0, 1, or 2. And, I remember the history of the swine flu vaccine, where you had a couple dozen deaths, about 400 to 500 cases of the Guillain-Barré disease reported. They stopped the program. They pulled the vaccine. And here we were, tens of thousands of reported adverse events, over 3,000 deaths, over 40% occurring on day 0, 1, or 2. And I realize Bayer's doesn't prove causation, but that would certainly concern me. And then I had a face-to-face meeting with a bunch of other Republican senators with Francis Collins. And I raised the issue with him, and he just blew me off. He said, Senator, people die. That's, again, my antenna were highly raised, alarm bells were going off in my head. But again, this is spring of 2021, and the safety signals have been screaming ever since, and it has just baffled me about why we are in a complete state of denial in terms of the Biden administration, the federal health agencies, the pharmaceutical companies, the mainstream media, and the big tech social media giants. The COVID cartel has been suppressing this ever since. And of course, because of my advocacy, I got connected to the thousands of people who have been vaccine injured, and I've given them a voice. I've let them tell their stories. I've met them. I've hugged the vaccine injured. I've hugged the survivors, people who lost loved ones within a day or two of the vaccination. I believe their stories, and all these people want is to be heard, seen, and believed so they can get help, so they can, receive therapy. Because without the acknowledgement that vaccine injuries are real, the medical establishment is just blowing them off. They won't even consider that as a cause of their ailments. It's really tragic.
It really is. There is, a positive development. It's only happened in the last 24 hours, but the CDC, according to the results that were released to the Epoch Times, says that it's found hundreds of safety signals for the two most widely used COVID vaccines, of course, Pfizer and Moderna. That is a long delayed, but I think monumental acknowledgement, something that they've really sat on for quite some time. You have been at the middle of, I think, some of the hardest truths to force into the public. Hunter Biden, the Russia collusion case, FBI corruption, the problems with the vaccine, even from good intentioned people who wanted to make a good vaccine, but there are problems. We should just acknowledge them. How hard is it in this current environment to get truth out? It seems like it's such an uphill slog if the establishment media doesn't want to cover it.
Well, it is very difficult. I mean, we are dealing in terms of government with the deep state. They realize they are pretty much immune. They can act with impunity in terms of hiding information from the public. We don't even have close to a transparent government. We have a deep state. It is populated by leftists. They are ideologically aligned, and they're just not going to let the American public know what they're up to. They've got vast power. When it comes to Hunter Biden, I mean, just take a look at what the FBI did to set the conditions for sabotaging the Hunter Biden laptop, should their threats to Mr. McIsaac not be effective, and he actually came forward with that laptop. And remember, when they left the shop, you know, one of the FBI agents said, turned around and said, by the way, it's our experience that people who don't talk generally don't get in trouble. And I think you know this, John, that you know, the day after we issued our report, Mr. McIsaac did offer us that computer. You know, because we had been provided these unsolicited briefings about Russian disinformation and Russian interference, you know, regardless of that briefing or not, we would have done our due diligence on that computer. I mean, it was a stolen property, whatever. But they were laying the groundwork with Twitter, these social agencies, with, you know, unsolicited briefings to Senator Grassley and I that they later leaked to smear me. But they were doing all this just to be able to sabotage immediately. If Mr. McIsaac went public with that computer, and of course that's what happened. I mean, within days, all of a sudden you got a letter from 51 former intelligence officials saying they had the earmark of a Russian information operation. That letter was an information operation. So again, I'm just highlighting that to put in perspective, that is what the deep state will do to protect Hunter Biden. Just think what they will do to protect themselves, their wrongdoing. If you go to COVID, the fact that they've been ignoring these safety signals, the fact that they sabotaged the use of these widely available, relatively safe, cheap generic drugs that work, you know, things like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and corticosteroids and budesonide. I mean, there's a cornucopia of drugs that work that, because of what Fauci did, the you know, health agencies, they sabotaged the use of that. So doctors wouldn't touch them with a 10-foot pole. I believe doctors who said that the hundreds of thousands of people died lacking treatment. I think an awful lot of Americans understand, too, that their loved one, when they got COVID, couldn't get treatment. It was just like, go home, they turn blue in the face, then go in the hospital, and I guess we'll shove remdesivir in your arms to the tune of about $3,000 and then a ventilator and just kind of watch you die. I mean, that's the sad reality of what happened in way too many cases with COVID. So again, with that as the history, with that as the reality, just think of what the deep state will do, you know, the COVID cartel, to hide their grotesque mismanagement of the pandemic. So again, agencies have learned that the press is not going to press them for information when it's a liberal administration. So they can act with impunity. So what we need, Johnny, you know this, we need whistleblowers. We need a lot of whistleblowers. We need the people that have integrity in these agencies, that have documents, that have knowledge. And maybe it's just a little piece of the puzzle. We need all those pieces of the puzzle so we can put public pressure to get these agencies to be a little bit more transparent.
Yeah, there's no doubt that is going to be the key for the next couple of years. 20 FBI whistleblowers we know have come out to you and to Senator Grassley, to Jim Jordan. We understand there may be more coming forward in the next few weeks. You just said something, and I know a lot of people in the past would have said, oh, that's Ron Johnson. He, that, that, you know, it's silly stuff. He said there's a deep state. and it's trying to impose liberal values. I'm going to read you a quote that occurred on this show yesterday because it didn't come from a politician. It came from one of the FBI's former most senior leaders in the FBI, former chief of the criminal division, the assistant director for criminal division, Chris Wecker. He came on the show yesterday. He said exactly what you just said, Senator Johnson. He said, listen, there's a wholesale takeover of the bureaucracy of the Justice Department. It's filled with the political appointees in every position. They are incredibly liberal in their politics, and they now have sort of taken over the FBI, and they're inserting that ideology into high-profile investigations. That's a career G-man, an FBI guy, saying exactly what you're saying. People are beginning to embrace the things that you, 2 or 3 years ago, were trying to expose. Now people are coming out and affirming them. Vaccines, FBI, Hunter Biden. Any sense of just a little satisfaction that maybe the truth is starting to sink through?
Oh, satisfaction be the wrong word. I mean, maybe an inkling of hope. John, I know what powerful forces we're up against. Like I say, I know what they did just to protect Hunter Biden, and I know I've got a sense of what they will do to protect themselves. You know, what gives me encouragement, though, is I had a FBI agent, you know, randomly at an airport, recognized me, came up, gave me an FBI coin to say, Senator, the rank and file are with you. Thank you for what you're doing. And I've had the same thing in terms of medical establishment, you know, doctors who, and I understand the fear. I mean, the COVID cartel is destroying people like Peter McCulloch and Pierre Corey and the doctors who have had the courage and compassion to not only treat patients, but be public about it. You know, these doctors, they spend decades gaining their skill. You know, the young ones are hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. They want to help people. They want to remain doctors. But when they see certifications being threatened, licenses being pulled out of the doctors, they can't come forward. I mean, the fear factor works. But quietly, they come up to me and say, Senator, thank you. Thank you for telling the truth. So, you know, there is that undercurrent of people that do see what's happening. You know, unfortunately, most people get their news from the big tech social media giants. I mean, they get that's the narrative. That's what's out there. So people got to dig a little bit deeper. They have to go into these alternate sites like Just the News and to get the truth, the Epoch Times. I mean, there is the truth out there. We still have a free press, but people have to go the extra mile to access it. I'm not under any illusions. I mean, I got reelected, but I sure was hoping I'd be chairman so that the subpoenas would already be flying on some of these issues. Now I've got to try and work. And I've by the way, you know, Senator Ossoff has been cooperative on some of these things, but I'm hoping he'll be more cooperative as hopefully his eyes are opened up with the public in terms of why we need to fully investigate what happened with COVID and some of these other areas. But unfortunately, so much of this has become partisan. It's, you know, COVID never should have been a partisan issue, but let's face it, the Fauci's of the world, you know, read Paul Alexander's book, Presidential Takedown, and you'll see the mindset of how they politicized COVID to basically take down Trump. Just the truth. I mean, by the way, there are some great books for your listeners. Presidential Takedown is a good one. Viral is an excellent book. Alina Chan and Matt Ridley kind of lay out that's kind of the whole origin thing and the drastic. When you talk about whistleblowers, this group called Drastic on the internet, these internet sleuths that just know how to mine information and data. I mean, that we need ordinary people to help us get the truth out. Cause Unknown is great by Ed Dowd. Excellent book, A Turtle's All the Way Down, if you want to kind of explore the whole truth about the history of vaccines. There are some excellent publications. The truth's available there, John, but people need to work a little bit harder to get it.
Yeah, well, because of you, it's a lot more widespread. You have worked so relentlessly and against such forces to just get basic facts out. But I feel like those facts are beginning to sink in. I want to turn to one thing and ask you this question. We had Congressman James Comer on. He's going to be the chairman of the House Oversight Committee. And he said that the roadmap you left him, the roadmap of the SARS, the suspicious activity reports showing Hunter Biden's receipt of suspicious money from overseas accounts, that is going to be the roadmap he's going to take it to try to take it to the next round. And that is to time up when money came into Hunter Biden from suspicious foreign actors and when it may have gone out to his father's accounts, as we know in some cases it did, or when his father took actions around the time that benefited the people paying the money. there's got to be some sense of satisfaction knowing that that's going to be extended. But also, you as a senator, will you be able to help or work with the House committees to help them along and to speed up their inquiries on things like Hunter Biden, COVID origins, vaccine injury?
Well, you know what a excellent team I have over here. So just from a standpoint of manpower, absolutely we can help them. We've offered that help. We've gotten indications they'll accept that offer of help. I mean, one thing, for example, when they bring in people to take to interview them, take depositions and stuff, it'd be very helpful to have, you know, my staff there listening to potentially give them some information. You know, not to interfere in the questioning stuff, but just be present to hear it.
Just having that institutional memory.
Yeah. I mean, so again, I hope they fully take us up on our offer to work on this, because, you know, I'm hoping in a couple of years we can, you know, be in the majority and have the type of subpoena power that you do need. But again, subpoenas only go so far. You know that. We subpoenaed Christopher Wray. He gave us, you know, pretty much the middle finger. He's continued to give Congress the middle fingers, as so many of these agency heads and officials do. So it needs to be a team effort. You know, congressional staff is only so large. I mean, we don't have unlimited resources. So we got to fully cooperate with each other. And the goal is the truth. I mean, from my standpoint, it's not partisan game. It's literally my goal has always been. I think somebody asked me one time, well, who are you going to target? I don't target people. I target the truth. The American people deserve the truth, and they're not getting it right now. And that's, if anything drives me, it's that. It's just, I'm just outraged by, you know, I come from the private sector, and we've got to be an open book. I mean, you've got the government come knocking on you. I mean, here's our OSHA 200 log. You know, we have to be transparent for the government. And then I come into government, I realize, well, the government's not transparent with us at all. I mean, they set the rules, so they're above the rules. And that is the exact attitude that is displayed by people like Christopher Wray and other agency heads. They, hey, we are the law. You know, you guys have rules. You know, we'll pass laws that you got to follow, but don't expect us to follow those rules. And by the way, you'll never catch us breaking the rules either, because we know where all the wrongdoing is buried. We know how to hide the ball. We do it very effectively, and you can't touch us.
It's an amazing dynamic. We are the science. We are the law. We are the deciders. And that has been exactly what our founding fathers feared a big government would become if we allowed it to become. So I want to end with this question, because it is the news of the day, but I think there's a much larger narrative. The same sort of debate that occurred in the Senate in November about who should be the leader and what sort of leadership the Republican Party is going to have going forward is now playing out in the House with the Kevin McCarthy saga. There's been a very robust, healthy discussion about a topic that you always talk about, and that is reining in the insane spending and the deficit and the debt and all the things that we foist upon future generations of America. Your reaction to the debate that's going on in the House and what it might mean for the larger conservative movement. Will conservatives actually go back and become fiscal conservatives, because their record in the last 20 years hasn't been that great?
You know, John, I come from a manufacturing background. And one thing you find out in manufacturing is you cannot have a good product if you don't have a good process that's under control. And right now, we don't have a process here. I mean, actually, we do. I mean, this doesn't just happen, these omnibuses. This is actually planned by both sides. Take everybody else out of the equation other than the four people who have power in Washington, D.C., the president, the minority and majority leader of the Senate, and Speaker of the House. I mean, they run the printing press here. Okay, they run the spending machine, and you need to involve the American public in what government spends and what we fund through their elected representatives. The way you do that is you restore a process, and that process is pass a budget. If you can't pass a balanced one, use the debt ceiling increase the way it was designed to be increased, which is, you know, attached to it fiscal controls that'll help you keep things under control in the future, and then use that budget to drive an appropriation process. I mean, there'll still be massive spending bills. I mean, there'll be hundreds of billions of dollars, each one of them, but at least it's more under control. There will be more things highlighted. I mean, you can start pointing out waste in the Defense Department or Health and Human Services or EPA. Okay, it's a better process. And so hopefully you'll have a better product. But, you know, I was always talking about, you know, when we, you know, had a leadership election here in the Senate, it really wasn't, you know, nothing personal. It was about establishing a different governing model for the Republican Conference in the Senate, and I would say the Republican Conference in the House. You know, get leadership to embrace, like by the way, like you do in the private sector. You know, most private sector companies, big ones, have a mission statement. They have general principles. I mean, this is how we treat our employees. This is how we treat our customers. This is the integrity we show. Here are our annual goals. You know, have that type of governing model where we establish, this is our mission as conservative Republicans. Here are our principles. I mean, the principle I would like to see is we support no legislation that would grow the size, scope, or cost of government. I mean, pretty simple, right? I mean, I'd make an again, we need to defend this country. That's the top priority. That would be another principle. Top priority, national defense, homeland security. Okay? Establish those principles to guide your action. So that's the process that we need to establish. So again, I don't get freaked out at all about if this is a multi-day process for determining the speaker, if it results in the leadership, no matter who that is, embracing principles that are conservative, embracing and guaranteeing an ironclad guarantee that they will pass a budget, use the debt ceiling the way it was meant to be used, and bring up all the appropriation bills to deliver to Chuck Schumer's Senate. And then here in the Senate, our responsibility would have to be use every parliamentary maneuver that we have at our disposal to bring those appropriation bills up in front of the Senate and just start a better process. This is so horribly broken, so grotesquely dysfunctional, and we're mortgaging our kids' futures as a result.
Yeah, and it's good to remind people that the last time Republicans actually followed that sort of a process, we ended up with a balanced budget for a few years. We actually had a surplus. The process actually can work if we can just get back to it. Senator, it's such a great honor to have you on the show, and it's a great honor to watch little by little the truth come out and other things that you've been talking about for a long time. I think 2023 year is going to be a very big boomerang year for a lot of these stories that the liberal press and the bureaucracy tried to foist upon us. It's going to be very interesting. We wouldn't have had that moment if it weren't for your hard work.
Well, John, we wouldn't have had a lot of these moments were not for your hard work. I mean, your groundbreaking reporting on Anthony Fauci in those foster kids in New York. I fully understood how important that was when I read The Real Anthony Fauci by Robert Kennedy Jr. But I mean, every step of the way, you've done such groundbreaking investigatory work. We need you to keep up your efforts too. So listen, I appreciate, you know, the kudos you're giving me, but I've got to come right back at you. You're an amazing journalists, and I hope people truly understand that and appreciate it.
Well, we got a lot more work ahead of us, but truth is our mission, so we're working together on a very important future for this great country. Senator, thanks so much for the time. We really enjoyed the conversation today. We're going to get you back on real soon.
Take care. Stay well.
Thank you, my friend. Take care. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back after these messages. Folks, eat stress-free this spring. How? With Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. That's great for a busy person like me. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your Springtown goals. Why do I use Factor Meals? Well, it's real simple. I'm busy, but I want to eat healthy. And if it only takes you 2 minutes, I'm all in on healthy eating. And the best part is that Factor Meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. All you got to do is simply heat and savor the good stuff. Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. I love asparagus. Head to factormeals.com/justnews50 and use the code justnews50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That code, one more time, is justnews50 at factormeals.com/justnews50. What are you going to do? You're going to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. while your subscription is active. That's a great deal. One more time. Head to factormeals.com/justnews50. Use the promo code justnews50 for half off your first order. Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down, and my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guaranteed. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brickhouse Nutrition and, of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. That's promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JustNews for 15% off. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. Like we did yesterday with the dramatic developments unfolding on Capitol Hill, there's no better person to bring in, no better authority than our own Nick Balassi, our congressional correspondent. Nick, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back, John.
What a day. Today kind of feels like yesterday. The same vote, same outcome. Kevin McCarthy falling 20 votes short. There were a couple of big developments. First, I want to talk a little bit about the story you broke this morning. There was a call last night where Donald Trump, the former president, got involved and was negotiating with Scott Perry, the head of the Freedom Caucus, and Kevin McCarthy. Tell us about that. That's a pretty important development we didn't know until you broke that story.
Yeah, so Perry was involved in that meeting with McCarthy and with Trump, and so they were talking about potential agreements. It was described to me by a source as productive. But then I saw a tweet from Perry saying, look, our rules requests, our rules changes have not been adopted, regardless of what you're hearing in the mainstream press or from McCarthy himself. And then also his Perry spokesman got back to me and just said he's standing firm and he wants a change to the status quo. So we're still at a standstill with the situation, and it just remains to be seen what the next move is for McCarthy, because it looks like they're heading to a sixth ballot in this speaker election.
Five down, maybe another one to come today, maybe two, who knows. One other change. So the votes are pretty much stayed the same, except for one moment. Virginia Sparks, congresswoman from Indiana, Republican, decided to vote present for the first time. That's another defection. Voting present means you don't count one way or the other, and it also changes the number of votes that Kevin McCarthy would need to get to have the majority from 218 to potentially 217. Tell us a little bit about that, what message maybe she and others around her were trying to send.
I think a lot of the members who are opposing McCarthy right now, they just want some sort of resolution because there hasn't been a negotiation. And the member you're talking about, or concrete resolution to those negotiations that may be going on behind the scenes. And the member you were talking about apparently attended a rules meeting with Biggs, the former House Freedom Caucus chair. So I think right now it really comes down to the demands they have. These are longstanding things that they've asked for in terms of rules changes and just the way that the appropriations and the budgeting process works in Congress that apparently have been rebuffed by the House GOP leadership. And clearly they want more than what's been approved up to this point in exchange for support for McCarthy. And I think that's kind of where this has to land. There has to be some sort of breakthrough in whatever negotiations are going on, because there hasn't been a concrete resolution, as far as I understand it, from my sources who are close to the House Freedom Caucus members who are opposing McCarthy.
Yeah. Now, there's one other question. I've seen it come up in my Twitter feed and others. So why is McCarthy continuing to have the same vote over and over again? There's a problem here, right, which is that the Democrats have not agreed to adjourn to for the day. So they have to do something. And that's why these votes keep occurring, correct?
Exactly. So because there wasn't a motion to adjourn, they have to just keep going back to back doing the votes. And we reported early on today that there was talk that McCarthy's allies were trying to, at least seeking, to get a motion to adjourn right away today, which would give McCarthy more time to do what we're talking about, these concrete negotiations, and maybe give the Freedom Caucus members a little more. He hasn't really had time to do that, at least not face to face. And so they wanted to do the motion to adjourn, but you also would need some support from Democrats if those Freedom Caucus members oppose a motion to adjourn. So it needed to be more of a bipartisan move, given the thin majority that the Republicans have in the House. So they haven't been able to do it. But there's talk of a motion to adjourn after this sixth ballot that's coming up. So if that happens, it gives McCarthy more time, maybe President Trump to get more involved to actually hash this out.
Now, a little while ago, I watched Ken Buck on television. Ken Buck's a pretty strong conservative. I would put him in the Tea Party sort of area of the party. And he said this can't keep going on, that there needs to be conversations. Either McCarthy has to make a deal or someone has to tell him to move aside. This shouldn't drag on beyond tonight. What do you think is going on? Do you think Ken Buck is representative of maybe a much larger group of people than himself when he makes those public pronouncements?
Yeah, that does sound right. I don't think the Republican Party in general wants this to keep going on, because whether they want it to or not, it's kind of projecting the image that they're in disarray and that there's chaos. At least it's what's eating up a lot of the headlines. And so I think they're trying to figure out, you know, what's the breakthrough here, whether McCarthy stays in it but concedes on some of the points the Freedom Caucus wants, or if some sort of consensus candidate can emerge to get the support of those Freedom Caucus members. I've also heard, I don't know if it's exactly true, I haven't been able to confirm yet, but I'm sure you heard it, John, that apparently there's talk of a consensus candidate with Democrats. I think that's a far-fetched reality. I don't think it's a far-fetched thing that could happen, but, I mean, we just don't know how this thing is going to end. We got to, hopefully, you know, there's some sort of breakthrough and we can, you know, get the Congress rolling. Because as you know, John, their family members are there. They're supposed to be doing the ceremonial swearing in. Without a speaker, you've got no swearing in. So if you look on the feed, you see a lot of small, you see some babies, you see some children in the audience, so in the chamber. So it's everything's kind of at a standstill. I think the American public is looking, watching this closely and waiting to see what happens here in the end.
It sure is an amazing thing to watch. And it's important to remind people that they're normally on this day, there would be a full Congress, but there are numerous congressmen-elect and congresswomen-elect who haven't been sworn in yet. Their only function that they can do right now, they can't actually act as full congressmen, is to vote in the speaker's race, but they're frozen in time. All the committees are frozen in time. So the work of the people continues to be delayed as this extraordinary moment plays on. Nick, we enjoy all the great work you're doing. Big scoop on President Trump this morning. A lot of other good stuff going on. We'll be sure to have you give us an update as things unfold over the next few days.
Awesome. Sounds good. Looking forward to it, John.
Really appreciate your good work. All right, folks, we'll take a quick commercial break. When we come back, a really fascinating budget conversation with Ted Harvey, former head of the Trump Super PAC, now running the committee to defeat the president. He's got some ideas about 2024. You're definitely going to want to hear them right after this.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. A big, big debate has been playing out in the U.S. House of Representatives over who's going to be the next speaker, but it really is a much larger debate about the identity of the conservative movement. Are the values that have long been there going to be the values going forward? And is speech and practice going to match? Are what people talk about doing actually going to be resulting in the actions that they talked about? Our next guest, well, he's on the front lines of trying to change America. He is the chairman of the committee to defeat the president. Ted Harvey's a former Colorado State Senator and really on the front lines of really making America better. Ted, great to have you on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me on. I'm honored. Appreciate it.
You have an incredible organization. It has been working hard to put an end to the Biden agenda and the Biden presidency. But you have to be sitting back watching this debate on the House floor. I'd like to get you a little bit, just a little sense of what it is that's really playing out here. I mean, it sounds like, oh, it's about rules and negotiations and compromises and personality conflicts. But there's a much bigger issue at stake here, isn't there?
I think there is. You know, I've been a conservative legislator for 13 years here in Colorado and trying to push the conservative movement forward and work around the country trying to get conservatives elected to the U.S. House and the Senate. And this is what this debate today and yesterday is all about, is what does it mean to be a Republican? Are we going to continue to work with the Democrats to expand our government, to expand our debt, or are we actually going to be small government, limited government, conservative free market proponents? And that is what this debate is all about. And you see how powerful a handful of minority members of the caucus can do when they stick together, stick to their guns, stay united, and push an agenda. And this close of a divided House of Representatives, a small group of united conservatives can make a difference. And I hope that they're able to push the caucus to a point where they will agree to rules that will make sure that we can't Christmas tree all of these different bills the way that we have for decades with a bunch of bloated amendments that are simply there to buy votes. And I think that's important for our republic, is that we have the ability to push back. And I think I praise these conservatives for sticking to their guns.
It is remarkable. And a lot of people say, oh, this is an embarrassment for the party. It's a distraction. Get it off television. Let's end it. But really, this is a healthy debate. It's been burbling for about a decade, right? The Tea Party members of the 2010 election came in. They got frustrated by the status quo leadership. Then the For America First members came in along with Donald Trump. They got frustrated by the inability to get things done. Getting this debate resolved, I think, probably has a long-term benefit to the conservative movement, to the Republican Party, that outweighs any short-term national television embarrassment. Do you think this will end with Republicans embracing the sort of government they've always talked about, which is smaller government, less regulation, less spending? Do you think this minority within the majority are going to prevail?
I think it's yet to be seen. I'm actually surprised that it's gone to three votes. I thought that we would get to one vote and the McCarthy wouldn't have his votes because people would say, well, I'll give you my first vote and to the minority group, and then after that I'll go with McCarthy. And then now we've seen three votes and McCarthy hasn't been able to consolidate the party behind him.
Yeah, in fact, he lost one vote.
Right. And that's what I'm most surprised at, is I really didn't pay that much attention to it because I didn't think that it would go this far. Now that it's gone this far, I think it speaks volumes to the the lack of support that he has. And I think it speaks volumes to the strength of this very small caucus of conservatives, that, you know, this is what happens when the caucus is this tight. I mean, the division between the House, the Republicans and the Democrats and the House is this tight. You can have a small group to do it. So I think McCarthy's going to have to, at some point, submit to some of the demands that they are requesting and rule changes in the way that we can amend bills, the way that the Rules Committee has such control over the direction of any bill that goes through this process. I think McCarthy's going to have to commit to some of those proposals, or this is going to go on and on and on, and it doesn't do McCarthy any good, and in the end, it doesn't do the caucus any good.
Yeah, no, every vote that he loses or doesn't sew it up, it just weakens his future speakership that much more. I know a lot of people say, well, it's about the process. You hear the mainstream media talking about this. It's about the process. It's about rule changes. It's about settling old scores. But really, this is about shrinking the size of government. These members just are tired of these massive, as you call them, Christmas tree bills that just spend without any regard for what the budget or what the revenues are or what the future consequence of debt is. Do you see it that way, that really, while the discussions about, you know, what's the Rules Committee going to be and when can then a recall of the speaker be, really it's about trying to get a hold of the spending that has spiraled out of control?
Yeah, it has nothing to do with recalling the speaker or anything like that. It has to do with the machine in Washington, D.C. uses the budget to buy votes in their independent districts rather than pushing a policy or a position that's going to be good for America. It is simply what's good for the individual politicians in Washington, D.C. And conservatives who truly believe in shrinking government and being responsible custodians of the taxpayers' dollars are tired of being rolled year in and year out for decades. And they got elected by their constituents to go to Washington, D.C. and push back against this, you know, they call it the swamp, but what it is just human nature. If people have the ability to spend other people's money, they're going to do it as politicians. And that just is bloating the budget to a point where it's unsustainable. And these conservatives are saying, we've got to change the process of how we pass bills so that we can control the human nature. And I think that until we do that, until we actually have people that are committed to doing that, we're going to continue to go down the line that the Republican Party has for decades. That's working with the Democrats to push the Democrats' agenda, not the American people's agenda. So I think this is a good thing. We'll see what happens over the next couple of days, whether McCarthy can pull it together or not.
Yeah, it's such an important thing. We did a little story a couple of weeks ago when Mitch McConnell took over as Senate whip in 2003, eventually becoming leader. The national debt stood at $6.7 trillion. Today it's at $32 trillion. That means 80% of the debt that this country has accumulated over 246 years have occurred on the two decades where Mitch McConnell was in charge. A lot of people refer to this as the uniparty phenomenon, which is that Republicans have yielded so much time to big spending Democrats that at the end of the day, there's not much difference in the minds of everyday voters. Is that a danger here? And is that what these activists, these Freedom Caucus guys are really trying to change, which is Republicans are different, not only in word, but in practice?
Well, it's undeniable that they are working together as one. I mean, you just look at what happened with the omnibus package that went through in the last couple of weeks, where the Republicans understand, everybody understands that the Democrats are a lame duck Senate, and the Republicans in the Senate could have just held out and said, we're not going to give you the 60 votes to get anything passed until we get a Republican Congress put in place in the House that will actually control the purse strings of government. Instead of waiting just a couple more weeks, Mitch McConnell and the moderate rhino Republicans, whatever you want to call them, worked with the Democrats to push through one of the Democrats' dream package to get all of their wish lists through before they walked out of office. And why would any conservative Republican have any faith in the Republican Party or Republican leadership if they're going to work with the Democrats in a lame duck Congress? They're not. And that's why you see this handful of conservatives in the House standing up and saying enough is enough. We've got to put rules in place that protect the American taxpayer against Republicans working with Democrats to Christmas tree all of these different bills. And until we have rules put in place that protect the American taxpayers from politicians spending other people's money, we're never going to get our budget under control.
Yeah, such a great point. Does this debate spill into the RNC debate?
Without a doubt. Without it, I think it's one of the same. What we saw in the last election cycle, over the last three election cycles, is McConnell and McCarthy really working behind the scenes to fund candidates that would vote for them for leadership. And you saw the RNC working behind the scenes to do the very same thing. And they had their thumb on the scale in Republican primaries across the country. And then after the primaries, you saw them have their thumb on the scale of which candidates they would fund and which candidates they would not fund, based on who they were going to be supporting for leadership. And I don't really care who the leader of the party is, as long as they are playing fair amongst Republican candidates. Stay out of the primaries and fund everybody equally if they have a great chance of winning an election. I mean, I don't want them spending money in stupid races where they'll never win. But if they have the opportunity to win, get out of the way and let the process go, and then fund those people that have the ability to win. You look what happened in Alaska with McConnell getting involved in that race simply because Murkowski was going to vote for him. And then not spending any money in Arizona to help us win the U.S. Senate race in Arizona. That was simply because one candidate would vote for him and another candidate wouldn't vote for him. And now we're in the minority in the U.S. Senate because of those kinds of things. And that's what the RNC was doing as well. We continue to lose election cycle after election cycle with the current leadership at the RNC. I believe we need to go in a different direction. Or if anything, if you are a small donor, don't give money to the RNC. Don't give money to any of these leadership election PACs, and give money to PACs like mine that are actually going out there and getting conservatives elected and doing everything we can to make America first, not make leadership first.
Such a good point. And you played such an important role during the Trump years with one of the most important Trump super PACs. Now that PAC has morphed into the Committee to Defeat the President, which means you have your sights set on Joe Biden and trying to get him ousted from office. Tell us a little bit about your priorities. And also, early on, what messages are working against the Biden presidency? There's been so many failures, whether losing in the court, fumbling the Afghan withdrawal, inflation in the economy, China's rise and Russia's war. What are the messages that most resonate with the sort of voters that are going to decide the 2024 election?
Well, first and foremost, I think that we've got to make sure that we do take back the Senate and make sure that the next Republican president has the ability to push their agenda forward in a conservative fashion by supporting conservative candidates in the House and the Senate. But then we've got to make sure that Joe Biden is defeated. I think one of the most important ways to do that is to get recorded votes. And so show the difference between a conservative Republican leadership and the Democrat leadership, leftist leadership. And the Republicans in the House need to send bills to, you know, through the House process and to the Senate that will get people on record. And the only way to do that is to carry bills like, I would love to see the Republicans in the House carry a bill to implement the Remain in Mexico policy that says that you cannot seek asylum unless you are doing so outside of the United States before you get here. When Donald Trump put that in place, it brought illegal immigration to a trickle. And on day one, Biden overturned that executive order, and now you see what's going on at the border today. I think the Republicans in the House should say, let's codify that in federal statute, and let's get a recorded vote on that. Let's get Republicans on a recorded vote. Let's get Democrats on a recorded vote and send that over to the Senate and see what the Senate does with it. I think that's going to passing bills like that, that show exactly what Republicans will do when they have control of the White House and of the House and the Senate, will show a strong defining line that says this is what Republican leadership is and this is what Democrat leadership is, because everybody understands right now what's going on at the border. And that's what happens when Democrats are in control. I think the Republicans need to show that kind of leadership of what will happen if they're in control.
Yeah, such a great point. If Biden doesn't run, I guess that's a possibility. There's some other interesting Democrats out there in your home state. A lot of people talk about Jared Polis having national ambitions. And of course, Governor Newsom in California, he's walking and talking like a presidential candidate every day a little bit more. How interesting are they to run against? I mean, they're unknown to a lot of Americans, but very liberal records in both states, probably not the sort of things that a lot of middle Americans are going to want to embrace.
Well, I definitely think Newsom is not somebody that the flyover states will want to embrace. He's very, very leftist. But I think in a Western state like Colorado, where you have a governor who was elected by 20% in his second run just in last November, I think Jared Polis is going to be an attractive alternative to Joe Biden. And Jared Polis is the first gay governor in the history of our country. And I think that he desperately wants to be the first gay president of the United States. And I think those that fund the homosexual agenda political machine in the United States desperately want to see Jared Polis be the first president of the United States. So he checks one of those boxes, and he's probably worth $500,000. I mean, not $500,000, $500 million. He can fund his race nationally as well. So I think he's going to be a very formidable candidate. And I don't believe Joe Biden's going to run. I think the Democrats are going to figure out a way to have him step aside. He's obviously declining mentally, and probably, I don't believe, should make it till 2024, much less get reelected and go till 2028. So I can't imagine that the Democrats are going to allow him to continue on as their nominee in the next election cycle. So I think that you are going to have other candidates in the Democrat Party get in, and I think Jared Polis is going to be at the top of that list.
Yeah, we got to definitely keep an eye out on that one. There's no doubt about it. He'll be an interesting candidate. And like you said, accrued quite a large election victory in a state that sometimes can lean red. And so that's something that's going to make him attractive to Democratic donors.
And who else do the Democrats have? It's not going to be Kamala Harris. It's not going to be Pete Buttigieg. It's not going to be, I'm blanking on his name, the former governor from Virginia who...
Terry McAuliffe. Yep.
Yep, Terry McAuliffe. Thank you. That got defeated. They have no bench.
Yeah, it's a thin bench. You're right.
The Republicans have really destroyed their bench over the last couple decades. And so now the only people they have are radical leftists from the East Coast or radical leftists from the West Coast. And Newsom is at the top of that list.
He sure is.
But he's not electable, I don't think. So that's why I think you're going to see an outsider like Jared Polis that has been a successful governor in the eyes of a Democrat rise to the top of the Democrat nominating process.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Last question for you, because you played such an important role during the Trump years and the success of the Trump presidency. 2024 on the Republican side, what does that look like? Is it DeSantis? Is it Trump? How do you think it plays out with the current mood of the electorate?
Well, I think that the Trump MAGA movement is probably one of the most powerful political movements of my lifetime. And I think that they are completely devoted to Trump and they will walk on glass to get him across the finish line in the nomination. And every potential candidate, primary candidate against Trump is knows that very same thing. And if they want to have the support of that huge movement moving forward in their political aspirations, that they are going to look at Trump running and they're going to say, I'm not going to run against him this time. And I think that goes for DeSantis as well. So I think DeSantis is not going to get in. And I think that Trump will win the nomination. And I think that if he wins the nomination, I don't think there's any way that any other Democrat can beat Trump with the current crop of Democrats that we just mentioned. I think Trump will win the nominations and he will win the White House again.
It would be quite a finishing chapter to the Trump presidency if that were to happen. A remarkable, really, it's been a remarkable 8 years already leading up to the 2016 election and all the way through. And Ted, you've been in the middle of so much of that success, so much of that history. And I know you have a lot more chapters of history you intend to write with the great work of the committee to defeat the president. Thanks for joining us today. Great, great political insights. We'll try to get you back on real soon.
I would love to. Thank you, sir. Happy New Year. God bless.
Happy New Year to you. Greg, great honor to have you on. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back after these messages.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. So grateful you could join. So grateful that we could get that update in the middle of the show from our great reporter, Nick Balassi, on the floor where Kevin McCarthy is headed towards a sixth consecutive defeat and his nomination effort to be Speaker. And then a great conversation with Senator Johnson. Remember some of the things he talked about. The consequence when truth is suffocated in America. Three consequences: Russia, Hunter Biden, vaccine efficacy and vaccine safety, all evolving and towards the truth that Ron Johnson told us was there, but that the establishment media, the establishment bureaucracy, the establishment social media giants tried to keep from us for a long period of time. Very powerful conversation there. And of course, Ted Harvey, who would have thought that Jared Polis is on the thoughts of a lot of political minds. He is a libertarian liberal governor, very popularly elected in Colorado. I think he won by about 20 points or 15 to 20 points in the last election. Three great pieces of information from three great guests today. I want to thank all of them. I want to thank you for listening. And remind you, hey, all night long, we're going to have coverage on the Kevin McCarthy drama going on in the Capitol. We'll cover it stem to stern. We'll keep you up to date. So go to justthenews.com, download the Just the News app from the Apple or Android store, and keep us at your fingertips. We will keep you informed as we learn things throughout the day. And until tomorrow, I want to ask that God bless you. God bless this incredible country. Yes, it's a little disturbing to think of what's going on in the Capitol, but it will work itself out. As Scott Kamek said today, nothing good in this country comes without some hardship. And I think that we will, whatever happens in this speaker's race, it will ultimately result in a better outcome for America. That is the history that our country has been built upon. And I have every reason to believe it will continue to move in that direction. All right. God bless you. God bless this country. We'll be back tomorrow. And in case you forgot, you've been listening to John Solomon Reports, a podcast from Just the News.
It's Amanda Head, and I am thrilled to introduce to you my new exciting podcast, Furthermore with Amanda Head, broadcasting weekly from sunny Los Angeles, California, and brought to you by the dynamic Just the News Podcast Network. On this fresh and engaging podcast, I delve into the latest news with a little bit of a twist, exploring the furthermore of every story. But this isn't your typical run-of-the-mill news commentary or politically charged program. I interview a diverse range of guests, including business leaders, entertainers, musicians, educators, experts, politicians, and many influential figures from both the United States and around the world. So why not make your Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays a little more interesting? Tune in on your preferred podcast platform and discover Furthermore with Amanda Head on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And don't forget to hit that follow or subscribe button and be sure to download the latest episodes. I can't wait to have you join me on this exciting journey.
At Just the News, we break the stories others in the media ignore or are too afraid to tell. We did it on Russia collusion, Hunter Biden, and the security and intelligence failures that preceded January 6th. Our stories have real impact and reach because we stick to the facts. I'm John Solomon. You can help me expand our honest, unvarnished, and unbiased reporting by becoming a premium member at Just the News. You'll get an ad-free experience and exclusive member-only access to events, and you'll be helping us dig up more truth. Join today at justthenews.com/subscribe.